Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of Chapter 5 from the ACE CPT Manual. My name is Eddie Lester, here to take you through and kick some butt as we get going into learning about the understanding of the ACE Integrated Fitness Training Model, or the ACE IFT. So, just to kind of preface Chapter 5, not a lot of test questions actually come from this chapter, which I kind of find surprising because this is where they kind of teach you how to begin the process of program design in the sense of how you're going to think about and organize your training strategy with clients and also how you're going to lay out your sessions and things of that nature, which is really important to being a personal trainer. But the ACE test doesn't typically tend to focus on this that much. So with that said, I'm gonna go a little faster through this chapter, point out what I think is the most important things for you guys to understand to be a great personal trainer and to understand how to be successful in the field. But there's not really a lot that you're gonna be highlighting. I might just tell you to highlight some stuff for your own knowledge. But yeah, let's go ahead and jump right in. This is on page 88, starting with chapter 5. And yeah, they kind of start with just describing how personal training has changed or since its inception about 30-ish, four or 30 years ago sounds about right. The late 70s, early 80s is when it kind of came around. So maybe in that 35-year range. Really, the focus has changed specifically around personal trainers focusing on more of a whole health approach, in the sense that what ACE kind of recommends is not only are you just taking someone through a workout, but you're really changing their lifestyle and addressing habits and psychology and motivational factors that lead to achieving their health and fitness goals. Not just like, hey, you want to get in shape, here's a fitness program, do it. Okay. Maybe in the beginning, personal trainers were more about that, come in, work out, and be gone. Yeah, that's basically how they introduce this chapter, and specifically they talk about improving function, improving health, improving fitness, and improving quality of life, not only through exercise that the personal takes them through, but also through these health behavior changes, which is basically what we went over in the first four chapters. It was a lot to remember on motivation and understanding everything to do with assisting people in making behavioral changes and stuff. So, all right, most of all of this information has kind of come about by research in the past, 10 years, we'll say, maybe 15 years of understanding people and their behaviors and understanding fitness goals and the sciences around fitness and cardiorespiratory fitness and adaptation around exercise and things like that. So, but the main point that they point out at the bottom of page 88 is you as a personal trainer are there to enhance basically people's activities of daily living. You know, well, to start with that, what does the person need? And these are some examples. Improve their function of their activities of daily living. You know, just what do they do on a daily basis that they need to, we'll say, train for. Lose weight and affect metabolic function from a disease standpoint as well as from a health standpoint, like reducing the risk of type 2 diabetes, develop movement patterns to avoid injury and improve postural fitness. That's kind of a big one there, and that's one that I highly, highly recommend that you always start with all your clients is determining their postural imbalances and addressing them, fixing them before you move into harder stages of training, and ACE would definitely agree. Then we have enhancing cardiorespiratory fitness. This is just for health, and specifically they say heart health in the sense that our hearts, if they are untrained, are less productive. And we kind of talked about that as far as understanding, our cardiovascular adaptations and how stroke volume can increase from continual cardiorespiratory exercise, as well as, endurance, or performance in sport, muscular development, strength, speed, and power. And those last ones are kind of more specific for athletes. But ACE definitely wants to include those because that's when we think of fitness, a lot of people really think of those sort of improving body composition and performance and endurance and muscle size and muscle tone, looking better. Those are what most people think of personal training and fitness, when in all reality you have all of these other attributes, such as the heart health, such as metabolic function, losing weight for disease prevention, and then activities of daily living. So yeah, to kind of move on, and we're going to move a little bit quicker now after that intro, is top of page 89, they talk about how the key concepts in this chapter, basically the whole chapter should be focused on, because it's really emphasized on the test, more or less, in that red box on top of page 89. It's not true. Definitely not true. Not a lot, if anything, really comes from this chapter, as it's almost just a summary of the previous chapters in related to motivation and adherence and enhancing behavioral change, but then just introducing the parameters for program design. So just keep that in mind. Kind of tricky there, but that's what we've experienced in our test taking. So yeah, along, you know, with the changes that the personal trainer can implement as far as their motivation, adherence, self-efficacy, let's talk about the research focusing on training concepts. In the sense that now we're going to get into how do we create a program? How do we understand what to focus on when creating a program? How do we determine, you know, how to get someone to a goal? What are the parameters? What are the acute variables? And you're going to hear this often, as the acute variables to that program design, to that program that you're going to be taking someone through. How many reps should we do? How many sets should we do? What type of exercises should we do? What's the intensity at which those exercises should be done? Should we focus on balance training? Should we focus on core training? Should we focus on, muscular or strength training? So let's go over the parameters that original personal trainers kind of thought about on that left side of table 5-1. Cardiorespiratory fitness, muscular endurance, muscular strength, and flexibility. That was kind of the general thought around personal training way back when. But in all reality, the contemporary or modern training parameters include all of these other things, and kind of a little of, or, you know, you have your muscular endurance, strength, and flexibility, but you also have your, we'll say, performance aspects of speed, agility, and quickness, coordination, speed and power, metabolic markers, they say, balance, core conditioning, movement efficiency, posture, and really just training the every aspect, or introducing more parameters to enhance the ability to achieve, we'll say, health. All right, so why are we exercising? Bottom page 89, to prevent chronic disease, to prevent chronic disease, and what is the 2008 guidelines? What do you know? It's in the fifth chapter as well. It's almost been in every single chapter, but the 2008 physical activity guidelines for Americans suggest 150 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity per week. And that's kind of as we move into page 90, they say 150 minutes per week, or of 150 minutes of moderate intensity activity, or 75 minutes of vigorous intensity activity per week. So once again, keep that in mind if it hasn't been beat to death with a stick, but yet, definitely keep that in mind, as that's kind of always tends to be a test question, because, you know, what does the government recommend? 150 minutes of exercise. Okay, cool. All right, so let's talk about bottom of page 90. We're going to get into some recommendations that ACE gives you for certain types of training. Okay, so the first sort of thing to address is this Fit VP model, or this Fit VP idea for programming exercise factors. Fit VP is basically going to be the acute variables for which you're going to create your program. And specifically, they start with aerobic training, or cardiovascular endurance, cardiorespiratory endurance training, and from evidence-based recommendations, and this is from actually the ACSM's guidelines from 2014, you know, how should you program an aerobic workout? Okay, and all of these things, I don't want to get, you know, crazy detailed into them. It's pretty simple, but what I want you guys to focus on is what factors you should be programming towards. So you should be, the Fit VP model includes frequency, okay, how many days per week are you doing it, intensity, what's the difficulty of that cardiorespiratory exercise, the time, how much time should you be doing it per session, or maybe per day, and the type, what are you doing, what type of cardiorespiratory exercise are you doing, the volume. Volume's a little bit tricky, but I would just consider it the intensity multiplied by the time that you do it. That's kind of the volume per session. They kind of say like, oh, a target volume of 1,000 mets or met minutes per week is recommended. Okay, that's kind of a no one measures that in the field. You aren't having people program and be like, oh, did you get your 1,000 met minutes of exercise or respiratory exercise this week? No, nobody talks about that. Maybe another way that you can do it is increasing someone's step count. I know the Fitbits and everything recommend about 10,000 steps a day. ACE, as far as volume, talks about, increasing from 2,000 steps a day to 7,000, something like that. That increases the volume of cardiorespiratory exercise. And then, below those volumes is still beneficial, but you want to increase the volume to increase and enhance the adaptation. All right, next, they talk about pattern. Pattern is basically going to be if you perform all of the exercise in one shot, or if you do it in a 30-minute to 60-minute stretch. You can work out, do cardiorespiratory exercise for 10 minutes on a break, 3 times a day, or if you do it all in one shot. And then progression is a slow increase in volume. Okay, you should do more times per week. You could do more minutes per session. You can do higher intensities. That's it, progression and increasing the volume. Basically, they just want to make sure that you don't do the same thing all day long. In a sense that if you run 3 miles for 12 weeks straight, you're pretty dang adapted to running those 3 miles at that point. You're probably actually used to running 3 miles after 1 month of doing it consistently, meaning you want to progress, you want to change the variables. As opposed to running 3 miles at a jog, why don't you sprint for 1 mile? That's going to be a big change. And create a different adaptation. So basically, just vary your training. Principle of variation in the sense that you want to make sure that you aren't doing the same thing all the time. Okay? So that's kind of the way that they lay out most of their training as far as the recommendations or the general recommendations. But yeah, you guys can read the individual parameters around frequency, intensity, time, type, volume, pattern, and progression that I didn't go over, but it's pretty simple. Just basically, what should you be doing, and how you can program a cardiorespiratory exercise. So, just to quickly go through a quick program for you guys to understand how it's used using the FitVP. So starting with frequency, I'm going to exercise 4 days per week at a moderate intensity for 30 minutes per day time. Type doing the row machine, and the volume is, I just consider it time multiplied by intensity. So if it's 1,000 meters per minute on the row machine times 30 minutes, that's maybe 30,000 meters, something like that. That's the way you can measure volume for the row machine or for running. You could do it differently. But the pattern, I'm going to do it in 30-minute straight shots. And progression, after 4 weeks of doing that, I'm going to change machines for variation and perform a different set of variables. That's the progression. Okay, so that's literally the way that you create a cardiorespiratory program. Pretty simple, pretty fun. This is why you guys became personal trainers, to learn that sort of aspect. And it's really easy when you break it down just by those, we'll say, seven variables. And yeah, feel free to reach out if you didn't quite understand that, but very easy, fill those in. All right, next, table 5-3, we're going to talk about the resistance training exercise general recommendations. And that's on page 91 at the top there. So now this is, let's say you want to create a workout program for an individual that wants to lose weight, okay, or gain strength. What should you look at to program? And this is where you guys want to kind of understand the specifics around the variables, because even though they say it's Fit VP, there's actually a lot more variables for resistance training, which is kind of confusing, and I feel like they could have done a little bit better of job of explaining that or coming up with a different sort of acronym to refer to this, but basically FitVP just refers to the variables that you'll be programming for the fitness program for this client. All right, so the resistance training recommendations, once again, frequency, intensity, time, type. Then you get, though, you get repetitions. You get sets involved as well. Okay, so reps and sets make up are a big component of the fitness program, and that's why they've included those. And then you have your pattern and progression. So let's go over these really quick because you as a personal trainer are definitely going to be focused on creating a strength training program, and that's probably going to be your main task for when people come to work with you. So the frequency, each major muscle group should be trained 2 to 3 times per week. That's pretty aggressive, to be honest. I wouldn't say 2 to 3 times a week. I'd say 1 to 2 times a week, in a sense that if someone was trying to gain muscle, hitting the same muscle group 3 times a week, you are going to be sore in that muscle group the entire week without fail, and you may even push over training. But if they're referring to like more weight loss programming in the sense that you're doing full body movements, yeah, you can get up to 3 days per week as long as you don't get overly sore. So just keep that in mind. Yeah, I'd say 2 times a week if you want to go pretty nuts for it. But I've performed each major muscle group training 1 time a week, and I've been able to achieve all of my fitness goals no problem. Just because on that one day, I really focus on that muscle group, and I'm pretty sore for 3 to 5 days in that muscle group afterwards. Depends on your goals and depends on the way you want to look at it. But once again, guys, all of these are more recommendations. You need to test them out on yourself to find out what works best for you. You need to test them out on your clients to find out what works best for your clients. So these are more general recommendations. These aren't set in stone sort of stuff, but I'm just going to give you my opinion as we go through it because I feel it's important as a trainer to not be like, oh, hey, I have a client that is training with me 3 times a week. That means we need to train the entire body 3 times per week. That's not true. Definitely not true. Maybe break it up into upper and lower body days or a biceps or a chest and back one day, shoulders and pull-ups one day, hamstrings and quads one day. Those are 3 different days there of 3 different muscle groups. And now that will be just as successful, especially for a beginner, to make sure you aren't overtraining. Then, all right, intensity. So intensity, I always have an issue with people using 1RMs for intensity because you aren't going to be testing 1RMs on a new client ever, period. You're never gonna jump into the leg press machine with a brand new client and test their 1RM because it's dangerous. So, there is ways to estimate a 1RM, but in my opinion, I like to slowly progress in weight and look at them as they perform those exercises with said weight and then determine what weight is appropriate based on their movement patterns, based on their skill sets. And it's hard to write that down, so most fitness companies just say, hey, or fitness certifications just say, hey, percentage of 1RM, good, that's easy. Okay, but it's really difficult to understand, and you won't ever really use it unless you maybe have an athlete that you can do regular actual percentages of 1RM. But yeah, all right, spend a lot of time on this. So just to explain, 1RM is basically 60 to 70% of 1RM they recommend for intermediate exercisers or novice exercise to improve strength. That's about a, we'll say, 10 to 15 rep range, maybe 8 to 15 rep range. And yes, that is true. That would benefit strength. That would improve strength. So, and 80% or more to with experienced strength trainers to improve strength. That's like athletes. But you need to judge based on the person, based on their movement patterns and their posture as well. There's a lot of factors that go into giving someone the right intensity or right weight for an exercise. And ACE may not do the best job of explaining that, but yeah, there's your 1RM explanation for intensity. All right, next, time. Oh, wait, they don't give a time. no specific duration of training has been identified for effectiveness. Basically, do not strength train for more than 60 minutes straight. I'll throw in a recommendation. As if you are strength training for 60 minutes straight or more, and this is your work sets, this is your when you're going for it, that potentially could increase the likelihood of increasing, we'll say, hormones that would negatively affect your performance. We'll say cortisol starts to elevate as you exercise, and if you continue to exercise for over an hour, cortisol levels become too high and can create symptoms of overtraining and muscle breakdown. So don't strength train for 60 minutes straight. Keep the strength training sessions, I'd say, around 30 to 50 minutes or under 60 is fine. Most of mine are in the 45-minute range, 30 to 45-minute range, depending on the rest periods, obviously, and the number of sets, the number of repetitions, the weight I'm using, all that matters. So, all right, next you have type. There's a lot of different types of resistance training. Keep that in mind. They say, major muscle groups, multi-joint or single joint, and a variety of exercise equipment. Okay, so this is anything, dumbbells, barbells, bands, medicine balls, you have your stability balls, you have your BOSU balls, you have kettlebells, you have TRXs, you have other suspension training systems, you have resistance training machines. You could use anything to exercise and create different types of exercise, from calisthenics to gymnastics to all over the board. Okay, CrossFit elements. Body weight by itself. Okay, that's enough. Repetitions. This is a general recommendation. Okay. 8 to 12 reps is recommended to improve strength and power in most adults. Cool. 10 to 15 is for the middle-aged and older individuals, and 15 to 20 are just general recommendations to improve muscular endurance. Those rep ranges can be stuck to for those goals. Strength and power, we'll say 8 to 12 reps. I like to even go lower than that for strength in the 1 to 5 rep, 1 to 6 rep range. But that's the recommendation. And definitely in muscular endurance, 15 to 20 reps is completely reasonable. And I even go from the 12 to 20 rep range for that endurance, maybe 13-ish. But when you start to get above 12 repetitions, that as long as you're not going super, super fast, that typically gets up into the 30-second or more time period, which is when the endurance elements or the glycolytic energy pathway kicks in, which emphasizes endurance training. So, all right, next, sets. Yes, once again, 2 to 4 sets are recommended for most adults, and that's 2 to 4 sets per body part. Sorry, did I read that right? 2 to 4 sets are recommended for most adults to improve strength and power. That's definitely per exercise, 2 to 4 sets per exercise. So you may even do 2 exercises, and that could increase the number of sets that you do per body part, but they aren't very clear on that. So it is 2 to 4 sets per exercise. Whichever exercises you are programming for that day, you want to perform 2 to 4 sets of each exercise. And even some exercises in the strength, when you're strength training, I say go more than 4 sets, in the 5, maybe 6 set range, depending, but test it out, see how it goes for you. A single set of resistance training can be effective for older adults and beginners. Yeah, that's definitely true. And below 2 sets, below or equal to 2 sets is okay for improving muscular endurance. Yeah, I'm still saying go to that 3 range for muscular endurance. I like 3 a little bit better, but that's just general recommendations from Ace. All right, pattern. Rest interval of 2 to 3 minutes is in between each set is definitely effective. You have your rest of 48 hours in between sessions for any single muscle group is recommended. So when we talked about the 2 to 3 days per week for each major muscle group, that if you rested 48 hours in between exercising each muscle group, that means you could get in 3 days per muscle group per week, if that made sense. But if you're exercising that muscle group effectively in one session, you're probably still going to be sore if you work out on a Monday midday and then you try to work out that same muscle group on a Wednesday midday, you're most likely still going to be pretty dang sore in that Wednesday midday group. So, next we're going into progression, which is a gradual progression of greater resistance, or basically never stop improving, okay? Never stop improving that specific muscular work. If you perform 3 sets on the first workout with that, the next workout you may want to perform 4 sets. You always want to be increasing the volume, increasing the total work performed each week that you exercise a specific body part. So, moving along, as we get into bottom page 91, they're going to talk about the certain diseases and how resistance training may improve that. And as you move over to page 92, you'll kind of see how they mention that those specific issues around, you know, osteoporosis and hyperlipidemia, how they basically are going to be recommending that those guidelines are might be different in the sense of everything that might be, or the conditions associated with those diseases may be cause for different variables and different recommendations. So let's go ahead and move a little bit more quickly as we get into bottom of page 92. It says the function, health, fitness, performance continuum. And basically what they're going to talk about is that there's a progression for each individual. And that's basically it. You start out with function, you move towards overall health, then towards actual fitness, meaning like increasing load and resistance training, and then more towards performance. And typically most people can fall right into those categories for progression. And, you know, someone that comes off of sitting on a couch for, you know, 5 years and not really exercising, can jump into function first and be successful. You know, that person that's sedentary and doesn't really exercise can't really jump straight into the performance continuum, or can't jump into performance training because they don't have the skill set or the coordination to begin that. So that sort of progression is what ACE is going to recommend as they kind of lay out their integrated fitness training model, or the IFT model. And at the bottom of page 92, they talk about figure 5.1, how it recommends function, which is just basic introductory training to improve human movement, we'll say. Then health, which is going to emphasize a bit more around, cardiorespiratory training and adaptations that improve overall health of the person. Then it gets into fitness, like the muscle gain, or just the body fat loss, weight loss sort of elements in which you're really focusing on that. And then into performance, which is the top tier and only needs to be trained for if there is a performance goal that a person might have. If they play tennis or a sport and they want to improve at that sport, performance training would be appropriate for them. So as we move over to page 93 into the think it through little box there in the middle of the page, basically, tons of people walk into a gym and pick up some weights and start doing some stuff that they have done in the past, or they don't really have a program. And they just kind of go through the gym and do some stuff, we'll say. And they're going to ask, you know, what's the risks of this type of training, and how do you explain the dangers to potential clients regarding that type of training? And really, it's a lot of people do that. And when it comes to explaining why that's not beneficial, is you could basically kind of ask them, you know, have they achieved many results doing that? And most likely it'll be a no, because doing random exercises kind of without the thought to improve and progress them through a, we'll say, a model or a continued progression sort of protocol, it's not going to be very achievable. And I know this from working out as a teenager and trying to, you know, get huge or gain muscle, which I was trying to do at that 17 to 18 year old mark. And just going into the gym and, you know, 3 sets of 10 reps with random exercises and not really doing anything else, just that. And I didn't really put on any muscle until I really started to study personal training and fitness and fitness programming, and recognize that, oh, if I hop on a program that I can track and improve upon every workout, and then switch up everything to continually create new changes and new adaptations in my body, I can always continually progress. And that's the way I would explain it to a potential client that just goes into the gym and does that, is your ability to achieve adaptations is much, much, much higher when you program and beat previous performances per workout. So tracking and building a fitness program that then you can build upon is definitely the best way to go. All right, and then they're going to introduce you to the integrated fitness training model, or the IFT model, the ACE IFT model. And it's kind of very similar to what we kind of talked about with the function, health, fitness, performance. But they're going to break down a little bit further into explaining it. And the IFT model, it's not very direct. It's pretty open-ended, but it kind of just gives a basic rule of thumb for how you can, we'll say, the areas to focus and the types of training to focus on as you progress someone through fitness in general. So, the beginning stage with the IFT is always developing rapport. And I like the fact that they'd mentioned rapport in their model, because you guys need to get clients, and building rapport and building relationships with people will get you clients. And also, as you build those relationships, as the person trains, it will continue to have those clients train with you, meaning that you will in sales and in business, you will be more successful. So keep that in mind. But let's flip over to the page 94, figure 5.2, and just kind of talk about a little bit about how they recommend setting up a new client. And they refer to it as the sample assessment and sequencing for a client. But yeah, so what happens? Let's say you're in the gym, you've been talking to a guy and build a rapport and made a good relationship with him. And all of a sudden he starts to ask you questions about achieving a specific goal he has. And then you say, hey, why don't you come in? We'll give you a free session and we'll kind of talk about, you know, how we can get you towards your goals. So he decides to come in. What do you do from there on out? How do you transition this client into a paying client, and B, how do you take them through appropriate exercise progressions to get them towards their goal? So ACE recommends the first session, what should you do? You should talk to him. You should get to know him. Do the health risk appraisal, and then do some basic resting measurements like heart rate, blood pressure, height, weight, that sort of thing. And you can also, in that first session, they recommend doing the medical clearance if their health risk appraisal is bad, meaning get that approval from the doctor, or just determine if they need assistance or need a clearance from a doctor. And also do static posture in the sense of do some postural assessment in that first or second or third session to ensure that what you will be working on as far as movements is appropriate towards safety, making sure you don't injure them because they have poor posture and you're doing certain movements that might not be beneficial towards that posture. So the way that I would recommend performing this sequence, and this is also what I do, is really we start out in the beginning of that first session with a par cue, that basically the health risk appraisal. We're going to do a medical history questionnaire just for them to find out, and also for me to kind of get more information on their current state of health. We're going to do the resting heart rate. We're going to do blood pressure. Typically, blood pressure is pretty quick as they have the machine-based blood pressure cuffs. And then we'll do height. We'll do weight. I'll also do body composition right then. I know it doesn't say to do that till further down into week two, but I want to know right away, what is the body composition of my client, and how can I use that body composition to sell them on a package that might reduce that body composition or increase their lean muscle mass in that sense. So then also in the first session, we're going to do all of the postural assessments as well. And guys, as you're doing this, you're talking to them, you're getting to know them, you're building rapport, and specifically really just talking to them, asking them questions, listening, gaining their trust. That's the most important part as far as the sales part of it goes. You're gonna do static posture, just a quick one. All the movement screens you need to do, as well as flexibility, and kind of the movement screens, I also consider flexibility screens to see, you know, what's their current state of movement. some certain things like the overhead squat or a squat assessment, a external wall or external rotation test on the floor or wall, see their upper body movement, see their lower body movement, maybe even a gait, a walking assessment, which we'll get into assessments in future chapters. And then once all of that is done, then I could talk to them about, you know, this is where you are currently, and this is where you need to go. And that's when I can make the attempt to sell them on a personal training package to get them started immediately with training on session number two. And you can break that up into two different sessions to build a little bit more rapport. And also, if it does go over an hour's time limit, depending on how you're feeling about the person, you can end it at an hour and try to come back and do the second session, or you can go, you know, an hour and a half straight. It all depends, because the goal there is to get the client to sign on for a personal training package, which makes you money. So you use all of those in the first session to develop this sense of, I'm a personal trainer, I know what I'm doing, I want to show you everything related to your current health that I can, to allow you to make an informed decision on where you take your fitness. And hopefully that's with me, the personal trainer, we can start working immediately towards achieving your goals. All right, so second session, or sorry, then they talk about week one. This is kind of now they're going back to their recommendations. Week one, they're going to recommend some balance training, some basic balance assessments, maybe static and dynamic balance. Also working their core week one, practicing certain core techniques like the draw-in maneuver, planks, just to ensure that their core, or to test their core function to see how much it needs to be worked on. You know, if you're doing three sessions in 1 week, you could definitely fill that first week up with balance and core training, no problem. Week two, they're going to recommend further health-related assessments, such as flexibility, body composition, and aerobic capacity. In week two, you can progress the balance and core training as well. You're also pretty much every session that you're with them is an assessment, all the way up until maybe a month or two, when you truly understand the way that they move. So, because you're going to be giving them exercises, and they might be good at some and bad at others. So, you kind of, it's all of it is going to be an assessment in general. But then week three, they're going to talk about muscular endurance and strength. So you can start to kind of include maybe some muscular endurance elements and or strength elements, depending on their goals. And then that first 3 weeks, they're kind of just referring to it as a trial to see what your how to progress and how to build an even more effective program for the second program. In my opinion, I immediately start them with week one on a program that's towards their goals. But we obviously start with the, we'll get into it in the next chart, but phase one stability and mobility training, making sure that we address all muscular imbalances and focus on core stability as well as joint stability through, you know, balance training and stability training and some minor endurance-based activities. Or muscular endurance-based activities. ACE kind of recommends this sort of lead-up to get to know the client more and help them break a sweat while doing assessments and kind of that whole process, which you can definitely do as well. Week four or beyond week three, they talk about that's where you can start to have a direct program built for the person that may address some things like coordination, or sorry, some skill-related assessments, speed, agility, and quickness assessments, coordination, power, reaction time, stuff like that, and even maximal strength sort of assessments, depending on the person's goal. So that's kind of their build-up from or to start a client in, and can definitely be something to follow, or you can do it more my way. It's kind of, all just depends. You guys will also receive, if you decide to jump straight into working at a commercial gym like 24 Hour Fitness or LA Fitness or something, they'll give you some training on how to perform that first session, and that'll kind of give you some ideas to how to sell and how to create a program from there on out. All right, so Yeah, the main components they say at the bottom of page 94 for the ACE IFT is functional movement, resistance training, and then cardiorespiratory training. So that is all displayed in table 5-4 on page 95. So this is going to be probably one of the more important things to understand from this chapter as far as the phases of training with the ACE IFT. I want you to know them. They may not be direct test questions, but you do need to understand that during stability and mobility training, if a client is working on stability and mobility training, they're probably a new client that has just started working with a personal trainer. Okay, and if they're in performance training, they're most likely not brand new, and they have had training in the past, and or they're athletes, that sort of thing. So, let's talk about the ACE IFT and the components and phases. So, phase one for functional movement and resistance training, you focus on stability and mobility training. This is your, utilizing single leg movements, core movements, flexibility movements, so dynamic stretches that encourage larger ranges of motion. Then for phase one, under the cardiorespiratory training, you're focusing on aerobic base training. And what is aerobic base training? It's basically getting someone to do steady state cardio without feeling like they're going to die, building up upon their base, their aerobic base, just getting them active and getting their heart rate pumping for, 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes at a time, and allowing that base to expand and their cardiorespiratory system to adapt in that phase one. Phase two in resistance training is going to be movement training. And what is movement training? Movement training is just going to be more coordination-based movements of the five major fitness or five primary fitness movements. The hip hinge, the squat, a press, a row, things like that. So those primary fitness movements you can kind of teach, but find unique ways to create coordination and effective movement within that. Cardiorespiratory training phase two is focusing on aerobic efficiency training. So beyond just the base and cruising at a steady state, you're going to try to push that aerobic base further, and basically they call it aerobic efficiency training. This is as opposed to walking on a treadmill for 30 minutes. They're going to try maybe running on a treadmill for 30 minutes, just pushing it further to enhance the efficiency of the aerobic system. Then you get into phase three, functional movement and resistance training, load training. This is where you increase load on the primary fitness movements and just in general with the client. ACE says you don't need to go into phase three or phase four unless the client has a muscular gain goal or a performance goal. Maybe a weight loss goal in there, but I definitely disagree. I really think that load training should be encouraged for all people as long as they're efficient movers. Maybe that's something that ACE could have more included, is as opposed to saying that you shouldn't go to phase three unless you have a goal for muscle gain or a performance. More just say that if you're moving well, you can choose to go into phase three if that's or to basically to build strength and achieve further fitness goals associated with health. I think load training is one of the most important things that you can do regardless of your goal, as load training does assist almost every single goal related to fitness. It's lifting weights, working out, that sort of thing. All right, phase three, anaerobic endurance training. That's where you start to push the maximal efforts with minimal time, like a maximal effort for 30 seconds, a maximal effort for a minute, and then you take breaks. Interval training, you may have heard of that. That's kind of the phase three aerobic or anaerobic endurance training. Then phase four, performance training, and then also anaerobic power training. That's for your athletes. Performance training is associated with, power movements, speed, agility, quickness, performance movements, maximal loads like one rep maxes and high strength training. Cardiorespiratory training, the anaerobic power training is going to be where you're focusing on absolute maximal efforts without, we'll say, I would put it more towards sport-specific cardiorespiratory conditioning, in the sense that For a football player, they may play really, really hard for 10 seconds, but then the play's over, and they get a 40-second rest. So creating programs around their sport can be, you know, anaerobic power training. Or just performance training. You know, a soccer player doesn't need as much anaerobic power training as they do aerobic endurance training, because they're running constantly for 45 minutes at a time. Depending on their sport, I say cardiorespiratory training associated with performance training should mimic what their performance that they're doing is and make that better. Okay. So that kind of goes over that. They talk about that below. And then another cool, we'll say, figure 5-3, page 95. They talk about function, health, fitness, and performance and how it relates to each phase of training, which we just went over above. And then at the bottom, they say rapport occurs through all stages and all phases. Through function, health, fitness, and performance, phase 1, 2, 3, and 4. And just kind of a fun figure there to understand kind of how you're building up a person. Work on function first, then focus on movement, then focus on loading them under certain movements, and then performance. Some people may not get to performance because they don't have performance goals. Some people may just want to lose weight, in which they can stay in phase 1, phase 2. I recommend phase 3, but All right, rapport and behavioral strategies. I don't need to go over this because I feel like the last four chapters, we just beat the behavioral change to death. Ace loves to talk about behavioral change. That's like their main thing throughout this entire textbook is that, how do you ensure that the client is going to commit to working through the IFT model? Or how is the client going to commit to exercise? How is the client going to commit to eating well and sleeping well and keeping their stress levels low and working as a personal trainer towards that, which is great. But they kind of, in my opinion, focus a little bit too much on that, to which they could have expanded more upon, teach me how to build a fitness program a little bit more effectively. But they do that pretty well, and they would definitely argue that they do that well. Maybe it's a little broken up as opposed to focus on one chapter. All right, so at the bottom, though, page 96, I do want to point out that after 2 to 4 weeks of regular physical activity, some changes will occur, some adaptations will occur. I want to point out the hormonal changes and neurotransmitter changes. So endorphins, serotonin, norepinephrine, those sort of changes create a healthier person. Increased testosterone for males, increased testosterone in a good way for females, just a lot less than males. And they're increased libido, increased self-efficacy since they completed 2 to 4 weeks of training, they mention. And then they're also going to be possibly experience DOMS, D-O-M-S, delayed onset muscle soreness, which if you haven't heard of that before, it's basically saying that you aren't immediately sore from doing a workout. You're sore a day later or 2 days later, or sometimes peak soreness can even be 2 to 3 days later. It's just the explanation of, or a labeling of being sore for, peak soreness at 48 to 72 hours in that range, which is, means that you put a lot of work in. That's what we'll say. But guys, if soreness lasts more than 7 days, you overdid it. And to tell the truth, if soreness lasts more than 5 to 6 days, you kind of overdid it. I think 5 is the maximal amount of time that you should be sore. And that means you did a lot of great work and didn't overdo it. If you have clients that are sore for 7 days straight in the same muscle group, you overdid it. And be aware of that, because some potentially the one legal consequence that you can get in is if you push someone too hard and they get into something called rhabdomyolysis, which is where the muscle starts to break down because they overtrain too hard, and that could actually put them in the hospital and cause a lot of bad things on your end. Always, work your way up with people. Never go ham or very hard immediately working with a new client. All right. Page 97, IFT model training components and phases. Let's kind of just describe each phase a little bit in further detail. I kind of feel like I gave most of the important information about those phases prior, but let's go ahead and get into just a little bit more detail. So they're talking about functional movement and resistance training. They're talking about the four phases of resist or just resistance training according to the IFT model. It kind of mentions that phase one, the assessments for training for postural and joint stability are there and are present and should be done. And then once the client gains good posture and coordination, he can move on to phase two, where further assessments and exercise selection are focused on the basic movement patterns. So things like single leg movements, squatting or deadlifting, bending over, hip hinge, pushing, pulling, and rotating. Those are kind of the five primary fitness movements in which you're going to build that. And then before loading those movements, you want to make sure they're efficient at doing them. Before basically loading those and going into phase three, you need to ensure that the client is able to perform body weight movements with proper form, has adequate core stabilization, can control their body coordination wise, in as far as their center of gravity goes, understand where that is and how to ensure that their wherever their load is, they load it over their center of gravity. And then also control the speed of their movements. If they're all over the place, you wouldn't want to move to loading any further. All right. And then phase three, they talk about applies to muscular gain, hypertrophy, strength gain, muscle gain, getting jacked, and getting swole. Those if clients have those goals, absolutely go into phase three. If they don't, they say you don't necessarily need to go into phase three. And then they say the same thing for those of clients that have performance goals, you can move into phase four. So those four phases are basically going to be, or as we move over to page 98, if I haven't said that already, you want to focus on specificity, overload, and progression. Specificity is what do they need to work on and how are they going to work on it? Create specific exercises to do that. Overload, make sure that you're not giving them something too easy. Make sure it does stimulate a adaptation. And then progression, once you recognize that they're achieving adaptations, you need to push those adaptations further by progressing. Okay, that is the ACE-IFT. And now let's quickly get into phase one through phase four of strength or of the resistance training model for the IFT. Here we go. Quickly on these. All right, sorry, I always say that and then I end up just talking my brains out, but hopefully you guys are enjoying that. All right, so phase one, you need to have good posture, you need to have good balance, you need to have range of motion, flexibility, and you need to be learning how to coordinate your movements. That's the whole point of phase one. How do you do that? You can do that with flexibility exercises, dynamic stretching exercises, isometric exercises, and balance training, core training, spinal stabilization, muscular endurance. All of those promote stability. And unfortunately, ACE doesn't say, hey, here's a bunch of exercises that promote that. That's the one thing that a lot of certification companies don't do, and ACE really doesn't do, unfortunately, is tell you, hey, here's a whole bunch of exercises for phase one. Okay, but understand that a postural exercise to enhance posture falls into phase one. Understand that most balance training falls into phase one. So single leg stuff, come up with exercises around single leg. Movement training, I mean, movement training is a little bit specific or broad, I should say, but with movement training, I would talk about that as controlled coordination movements, making sure that you control your movement and your body. And then range of motion, super important. Phase one, you always focus on increasing flexibility of specific joints that are important towards creating effective movement. So, basically, shoulders, thoracic spine, lumbar spine, hips, knees, ankles. Absolutely. All those need to be flexible and should be worked on in phase one. All right, hopefully that was good enough. Phase two, movement training. This is where you're going to focus on training certain movement patterns, the five primary movements. I want you to highlight these because in another chapter we're going to go over these, but they can show up on the test. Page 99, bend and lift movements, single leg movements, pushing movements, pulling movements, and rotational movements. Okay. Those are what ACE considers the five primary movements. I want you to know those absolutely for your self, and then potentially there might be a test question on those, so understand that. Yeah, so bend and lift is a squat, okay, or a deadlift, in my opinion. That is, yeah, your they call it, yeah, sit down, stand up, squats, deadlift, or lifting an object off the floor is a deadlift. Single leg movements, this can include lunging or, yeah, split stance or single leg balance movements. Then you have pushing movements. This can be put, you can push in four directions, they say, which is forward, okay, during a push-up, overhead, okay, pushing laterally, and then lifting one's torso from side lying. Okay, so I mean, yeah, just pushing movements. Yeah, I'm more about the two pushes in the forward push and the overhead push. So a push-up and an overhead press or a shoulder press. Those are my main pushing movements that I would focus on. Pulling movements, those occur when you bring something towards yourself by pulling it towards you. Row machine or any sort of row, a horizontal row, a low row, a cable row, a bent over row towards the chest from a horizontal positioning, and then a vertical row or a pull up where you pull something towards your chest from a vertical position. That is, those are the pulling movements. And then rotational movement, this is spiral movements. So yeah, rotation of anything, you know, medicine ball rotations to work out abs, rotational throws, rotational cable movements, picking an object up from the left side and moving it to the right side, a rotational movement. Okay, so they say that those are the most common movements associated with everyday life as well as fitness. So keep that in mind. But yeah, really, how do these bend and lift and single leg and pushing movements and pulling movements, how can you kind of classify them? Well, they want you to know the planes of motion. And specifically, there is test questions on all the planes of motion. They don't even describe these planes of motion very well in this textbook. If you have the ACEs Essentials of Exercise Science workbook, which is, yeah, a whole separate textbook from this, they will explain that in detail, but most of the test questions come from this book. I'd say only 5 total questions come from the Exercise Science Handbook or Exercise Science for Fitness Professionals. The actual title of that book is ACEs Essentials of Exercise Science for Fitness Professionals, if you wanted to look it up online if you don't have it. It's a pretty good kinesiology book and has some good work tools for you to understand. It also goes over nutrition a bit more in there, since this book does not have a nutrition chapter, which surprises the heck out of me. Hopefully they gave you both books. Or if you just got it from a buddy, maybe ask them if they have the ACEs Essentials of Exercise Science as well textbook. But they're two, this book's about 800 pages and that book is about a total of 300 pages. So lot of reading to do, 1,200 pages if you want to get through all of it. But hey, you're here with me, so let's go ahead and bring back the focus over here. Transverse plane movement, okay? Rotational movement is associated with the transverse plane. If you look at figure 5-4, the anatomical position and planes of movement, the transverse plane cuts the body into upper and lower halves, meaning that when you rotate, you go along with that. You could imagine the transverse plane, if you stuck your arms out and then rotated around like a helicopter, the plane that your arms are making going around like a helicopter would is the transverse plane, and you have to rotate to create that plane, go in line with that plane. Next, you have we'll go with the sagittal plane next. The sagittal plane divides the body into right and left halves. And the sagittal plane is flexion and extension movements. So elbow flexion, doing a crunch, spinal flexion, hip flexion, elbow extension, shoulder extension, hip extension, knee extension. All of those are front to back movements and run parallel to the sagittal plane. Okay. Then you have the frontal plane, which is going to divide the body into front and back halves. And moving side to side, like a side lunge or side shuffling or tube walking or laterally abducting your arm, your shoulder, abducting your leg, moving to the side, doing ice skaters, side-to-side movements. That's all in the frontal plane. So hopefully that was enough to kind of get you introduced to those planes. You want to know kind of what joint motions are associated with each plane of motion. So the sagittal plane, once again, is flexion and extension. The frontal plane is, we'll say, lateral flexion of the spine, side-to-side movement, lateral flexion of the neck. abduction, adduction, those abductions, eversion, inversion of the foot. Yeah, that's most of them. And then the transverse plane is any rotation, you know, hip rotation, or internal rotation, external rotation, pronation and supination are also in the transverse plane. And then like cervical rotation, shaking your head, no, that's in the transverse plane. Okay. All right. And then at the bottom of page 99, they talk about eccentric actions. That's a very kinesiology-based description, but muscle actions are concentric, eccentric, and isometric. They don't ask direct questions around that, maybe one, just about what muscles like concentrically act during a squat, which I want you guys to know that and find out. Or yeah, the muscles that concentrically act during a squat are going to be the quadriceps and the glutes. They help with hip extension and knee extension in the upward phase of a squat. That's concentric muscle action. That's the main question they ask around those movements. But yeah, once again, ACE doesn't focus too much on kinesiology on their test. Really just more about the principles around behavior and a little bit about their certain movements and assessments and things like that. So yeah, we'll go through the rest of the book and you'll also point out what's most important. But yeah, if you wanted to write those things down, those do make it onto the test that aren't necessarily in this book, in this chapter. So moving over to page 100, we're going to get into now load training. So we kind of talked load training, and basically all that is doing those five primary fitness movements with load. That's the exact way I want you to think about it. And that load increases the stress on the muscles and can therefore create hypertrophy. It can create strength gain and things like that. Okay, pretty easy. That's when most people think of bodybuilding, it's in phase three load training. And yeah, when most people think of just fitness in general, they think of load training, which is lifting weights. So all different types of machines, barbells, dumbbells, kettlebells, tubing. We talked about that. Increasing the resistance in any way, increasing the load is load training, specifically for hypertrophy, for strength, for muscular endurance. All that's the main goals of load training. Just adding weight to the five primary fitness movements. And then performance training is at the end, page 101. Performance training is a lot. You won't be a good performance trainer until you have a lot of experience working with athletes and or, have worked with athletes in the, or unless you, or yeah, or if you've worked with athletes in the past, or you yourself are an athlete that has enhanced your performance in a sport. If you're coming into personal training as more of like, I want to work with normal people, you don't need to worry about performance training too much. The one thing I might say is that it's kind of fun to perform some speed, agility, and quickness. Speed, agility, and quickness activities with your clients for cardiorespiratory activity. So to maybe educate yourself on some fun, cone drills or exercise ladder drills, things like that. Most of the time, you won't need to know too much about performance training unless you plan on training athletes. For those of you that plan on training athletes, this is not the best book for you to read. Athletic training is very, very specific to each sport. And you should do some research as far as what sport and what athletic training parameters are used in that sport for you to benefit off of that. Okay. But absolutely, strength training and performance training, power training are very important and crucial to performance in sport. So let's go over this a little bit more closely. This is phase four, performance training, page 101. They talk about the, basically force production, increasing force production, increasing the speed of force production, which is power. Power is basically enhancing velocity of the force production, and basically the ability to get the muscles to generate the most force in the shortest amount of time. That's what power is. And basically taking medium to lightweight and moving that as fast as you possibly can is power training. There's a lot of different activities and exercises that you can do. You can look those up based on your sport. But yeah, so some of the equations that they mention around power is force times velocity equals power, or work performed in a specific time is power. I like force times velocity. a lot better because the amount of force being produced and the velocity that that object is moving is equal to power. Meaning that if someone can throw the same weighted ball farther, they are producing more power. Based on the force produced and the velocity that occurred, there's more power. So if you want to have a fun, competition with your friends, pick up a 10-pound medicine ball and see who can throw it the furthest. Therefore, that person is more powerful most of the time. Sometimes it is technique. Sometimes it is length of lever arms and certain things like that. Some people might be more prone to throwing something farther than others, but for the most part, power is equal to the force times the velocity of the movement. All right. Also, what types of exercises are considered performance training? Plyometric training is huge. They get into plyometric training a little bit. When I think of plyometric training, I want you guys to think of jumping movements, throwing movements like medicine ball throws, and Olympic lifts can be plyometric, box jumps, things like that. And the components that make up the fit VP for that are going to emphasize intensity and technique over the amount of repetitions, meaning you want to perform an activity 4 times with the most power possible, what with good form, as opposed to 10 times where the form breaks down. So emphasize the technique and the effort and intensity over the total number of repetitions. Make sure that form is perfect, and that is going to enhance performance training. Plyometric training, they're going to talk about motor unit recruitment, increasing rate coding. Motor unit recruitment is basically activating the muscle fibers from the nervous system. Increasing rate coding is just basically the speed at which those motor units are stimulated by the nervous system. The faster that the brain can create a signal and send signals to the muscle, the more powerful you can be. And then also with plyometric training, you have a stretch reflex, which is basically reducing the time between when you land and when you jump again, or the eccentric phase and the concentric phase of plyometric training. Minimizing that time increases the stretch reflex, which is basically the connective tissue within the muscle stretches, and you could utilize the elastic property of the muscle to then project you upwards. Meaning, like, if you preload a squat and you squat really low quick and then you jump as high as you can, you're going to get higher than if you squat really slowly, pause at the bottom, and then jump because you have the stretch reflex. All right, good times. Next, page 102, they're going to get into cardiorespiratory training related to the ACE phases or the ACE-IFT phases. I don't really need to go over this too much. You can kind of just name them and understand them. If you're really big into endurance training, read this section and understand it for your own good. But yeah, phase one, bottom page 102, aerobic base training. You're building a base of steady state cardiorespiratory fitness that you can improve upon. Typically 1 month. 1 month of increasing regular cardiorespiratory activity, phase one. They also point out lactate threshold. I just want to explain what lactate threshold is really quick. It's the point at which your body switches from aerobic to anaerobic training. When intensity rises, your body is going to need to switch over to shorter and more fatiguing methods of fueling itself. And the lactate threshold is an example, or is the description of what happens during that time period. When you're switching from a steady state cardio, that's nice and easy, or not easy, but you can continue to do it at the same intensity. And then all of a sudden, I kind of like to describe it at the end of a marathon, how you see, or at the end of a running race, where at that very end, you start to sprint as hard as you can, but you can only sprint for another 10 seconds or so. That's that switch to that anaerobic energy production, in which lactate starts to build up in the muscle and you get a higher burn. That's why they call it the lactate threshold. But through endurance training, you can increase your lactate threshold to where you don't feel the burn as quickly, or you can feel or don't feel it as, or yeah, since you don't feel it as quickly, you can go longer with that sprint at the end. All right. How is phase one kind of measured in intensity wise? They talk about the talk test. The talk test is basically the person can complete a sentence without taking a breath. So, I went to the store and I bought bananas. Okay, that is passing the talk test. That's my sentence that I use. Hope you liked it. then to fail the talk test would be, I went to the store and I bought bananas. That's too high of an intensity and that fails the talk test. So with aerobic base training, you should be able to complete a sentence. That's basically the way that they describe it, or the way that I describe it. And it's a lot easier than what they talk about. Yeah. If the client can perform an exercise and talk comfortably, they are in VT1. That's the talk test. That's their description. And you could also use the RPE scale, ratings of perceived exertion, on a 0 to 1 to 10 scale, and that 3 to 4, where you're slightly uncomfortable, but not that uncomfortable. It's just kind of right in that middle range. All right, aerobic efficiency training. You're basically attempting to get into, we'll say, above or at the peak end of ventilatory threshold 1, VT1. That's a way to describe it. You guys don't need to know what that means. It's kind of crap. Just basically you need to build upon the base. Phase 2, you add to the base to enhance your ability to endure steady state exercise at a higher intensity for the same amount of time or even longer times. Okay, 104, we're moving quickly through that. We'll get into phase 3, anaerobic endurance training. Ventilatory threshold 2 is going to be where anaerobic training begins. VT2 is where your body can no longer hold that intensity and fatigue so much that they need to lower intensity to continue. This is, like I said, running for a minute as hard as you can and then taking a break for a little bit, or then walking. Okay, sprints, interval training. That's what anaerobic endurance training is improving your ability to use the anaerobic system for as long as possible. That's more or less all I need to say. You can read a little bit more if that's what you're really into, if you're into running, or if you're into phase 3 isn't going to be steady state running or marathon running. Phase 3 is going to be a basketball player that has a minute of high intensity running, and then the ball goes out of bounds, and they get a 30-second break, or a foul's called, and they get a 1-minute break, or a timeout's called, and they get a 2-minute break, stuff like that. Okay, that's going pretty hard, and not being able to sustain that full intensity, since you're going very, very hard. Interval training is that sort of example. Then phase 4, you have your anaerobic power training. Anaerobic power training is going to be where you try not to fatigue. The heart rate will get very high, but you try to go as hard as you can and not necessarily get to full fatigue. Meaning you should go as hard as you can for 15 seconds of something. The heart rate's going to go through the roof, and then you will take a rest long enough to regenerate full capacity and then go again. This is like your football players. Go as hard as you can for 10 seconds, and then do that 40 times during a game, which is pretty insane if you think about it. Most of the time when I'm doing anaerobic power training, I'm doing 10 maximal efforts, not 40. But kind of shows you the shape that those football players need to be in order to complete a game with, you know, doing 40 sets of anaerobic power training, or, you know, high intensity, way above VT2. Going really, really hard. Okay. They talk about the phosphagen system, the fast glycolytic system. It's basically the, under 15 seconds or less, I'd say, is where you want to train for maximal effort, like box jumps, as many and as high as you can for a short amount of time. All right, moving into page 106, as we get towards the end of this chapter, I guess just to quickly go over, table 5-5 and 5-6. They're talking about the training zones associated with those phases. You can kind of read that just to understand it a little bit, but zone 1 is going to develop a base of VT1 talk test threshold that increases. Then zone 2 is where you kind of transition into that, not quite VT2, where you get to anaerobic work. And then zone 3 is where you get into full anaerobic work and you're pushing really hard. They say percentage of training time. They're referring to the how long in each session that you can work on that, I'd say. Zone 2 and Zone 3, you don't need to work on very long to improve that. But Zone 1, you do need to work on for, you know, 30, 40 minutes to improve, because that's more in the steady state base. And then Table 5-6 are talking very similarly about maximal efforts. And actually, it seems to be the almost the exact same chart minus Zone 3. They talk about anaerobic power intervals need to be at a maximal effort, RPE 9 to 10, for very short duration. We'll say under 15 seconds, like I kind of mentioned. Woo! All right. Moving to special population clientele, we are basically just going to say that based on the client's condition within the special population spectrum, you need to adjust guidelines. And all those guidelines are present in Chapter 14. Okay, that's all I need to say. Osteoporosis, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, all of those are in the special populations spectrum, and those have different guidelines. Follow those by looking at Chapter 14. And then the expand your knowledge, which kind of basically takes us to the end. It does take us to the end of this chapter. Expand your knowledge, bottom page 106, all the way through 107 and 108. They're talking about the IFT model during the life cycle. And really, they just focus on children and kind of explaining how their IFT model was basically modeled after the ability to become more coordinated, build up more of a cardiorespiratory base before moving on to higher levels of play. And they describe how an infant goes through, you know, an easy stage and they start to move, and that generates heart rate increase, which will then take them to be able to do, you know, in the next few months, they'll be able to do more work and more work and more work. And they basically slowly get more coordinated. They start to sit up, they start to walk, and slowly they increase their ability to perform more and more work. They kind of modeled their IFT, or integrated fitness training model, after that sort of thought of how a child grows up and becomes more and more active. Yay. The one thing that I want to point out is that kids, when you think about the movements that kids do, it's really, you know, they're jumping, they're running, they're climbing, they're swinging, they're throwing, they're catching, they're all these types of things. And what that does is that is going to develop their ability to play longer and play faster the more that they do that. And then human development, they say, is going to be programmed from mobile newborns all the way up through, the load training. And the load training, in my opinion, I think ACE, they don't directly say it, but basically once you start to hit that puberty range, load training can kind of come into play to become stronger and better at those play activities that they do, which most of the time by that puberty time, they're in active sports and they're performing performance activities too. So that's going to be about it. You could read a little bit further into that and understand that a little bit more if you are interested in kind of understanding the relationship between human growth and childhood development and the IFT model. And that's going to be about it. Okay, so I spent way more time than I thought. That was actually the longest lecture so far, but I'm really trying to enhance your guys' ability to become good trainers. And I feel that this chapter is important for programming and kind of setting you up to understand programming. As you get into further chapters, you'll have a better understanding of the acute variables around it and how to kind of put it together and why you might do it in a certain order. So thanks for hanging around with me, guys. Nice little 80-minute lecture there for you. Go ahead and complete the assignments associated, or the study guide chapter associated with this chapter. And also complete the quiz, assignment audio, explanation, or the answers to the assignment. Listen to that. And make sure you score nice and high on that quiz. And I look forward to seeing you in the next chapter. Cheers.